know the parliament is the secret. I understand what you're saying.
Why it is to say that it is empty. So I mean,
So good morning, everyone. I hereby call this meeting of the Michigan State University Board of Trustees for Friday, September 9th, 2022, to order. Our first order of business is approval of the proposed agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstention? The agenda is approved. Next order of business is approval of the minutes. Can I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Is there any discussion? These are the minutes of June 24th, 2022. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries. We will now move to public participation. Board Secretary Eric Sforza.
We will now proceed to the public participation portion of the meeting. Each individual who has signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. Your time will end when the buzzer sounds. Any responses from board members will come during the trustee comment portion of the meeting. We will now hear from Rex Lamore, followed by Sheridan Phelan.
Morning.
Morning.
I'm Rex Lamore. I'm a member of the Ad Hoc University Sustainable Investment Working Group. You should have received our report that we completed over the summer. In the fall of 2021, the group of dedicated faculty, students, and concerned partners undertook a fact-finding investigation to more fully understand the board's policies and practices as it relates to our institutional endowment. And so this report reflects the findings of that work over the past several months. You may recall on Earth Day, April 22, we presented to the board our fact-finding survey, and with your support, we got a response from that survey in June, and over the summer, the team worked to analyze the responses to that survey and prepared the report that you have before you. Let me just say that the motivation of this work is guided by the belief that it is an obligation of higher education to seek the highest degree of stewardship and accountability in managing our investment. And further, we believe that this necessitates a systemic approach to identifying our MSU community values and a collaborative approach of integrating those values into the way that our common investment fund is managed and invested. Frankly stated, the way that we manage our money is a statement of our values. So just briefly, I'm going to cover a couple of the key recommendations in the report for you and then try to respond to any questions that you might have regarding our report. So recommendation number one, we were pleased to see that the board has in its investment policy general statement, and I quote, within the context of its fiduciary responsibilities, the board will exhibit social conscience in the administration of the university's investments. Oxford Dictionary defines social conscience as a sense of responsibility or concerns for the problems of injustices in our society. While we applaud the board in recognizing that you need a social conscience to guide your investments, we are concerned that the board does not define what that social conscience is. So we recommend that the board develop a framework defining specifically what values you believe are important and what problems you seek to address in expressing your social conscience. So defining that, we refer you to our strategic plan and our diversity, equity, and inclusion plan for guidance in what you might include in that statement. We also recommend that you routinely review this statement and apply that to your engagement with consultants and managers of our investment funds so that they adhere to that. Oops. Recommendation two. I'm sorry. Did I already run out of time? I'll be quick. Sorry, but I have a little bit more time. Recommendation two. is to, expand your consultative network. We recommend that you engage an additional group of investors in your consultancy. We understand that you might involve minority-owned, women-owned investment corporations and corporations that are particularly sensitive to investing in Michigan and others. And then finally, we recommend that you increase your transparency in your work so that others may be involved in helping you guide the investments of this institution. Such transparency will increase the trust that others have in how you're managing our endowment. I'd be glad to respond to any questions that you might have regarding the report and look forward to the opportunity to discuss with members of the board and or your designees the findings of this fact-finding group. Thank you for the additional time. Is there any questions I might respond to? Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. President. All right. Thank you. Thanks for the time.
Next, Sheridan Phelan, followed by Mark Tarquini.
Hello, board members, President Stanley. My name is Sheridan Phelan, and I'm a former varsity swimmer. I hope you're doing well today. I'm here this morning because I'm not. Almost 3 years ago, I made my commitment to Michigan State. Just so you know what entailed, it was a commitment with no athletic scholarship, a commitment that I'd be swimming for 4 years, and a commitment to the idea that Spartans will. Something I really want you to understand is that prior to coming here, I had no connection to Michigan State. My family comes from New England, and I live in Virginia. It was swimming that brought me here. My commitment to swim at Michigan State was the reason for driving 10 hours from home to a school where I knew no one. Talk about a welcome. Just 2 months after I got here, Mr. Beekman announced the termination of the program. I was left feeling cheated and worthless. I hadn't even swam a meet against another school, and we were told we weren't good enough. The times I was recruited on just a year prior were no longer good enough. To add to that, I would later understand that this decision was made months prior when I was graduating high school. Yet I hadn't even stepped foot on MSU campus. You already decided I wasn't good enough, but you also decided not to tell me until I got here. That was almost 2 years ago. 2 years, you might be thinking, Sheridan, you should have moved on by now. Well, believe me, I tried. Every day I try to move on, but every day I can't help to notice the missing piece that has been integrated in more than half my life. Feeling insecurities I've never considered before, questioning my self-worth, and beating myself up because you made me feel I wasn't enough. You might be thinking, Sheridan, why didn't you just transfer? Because when I made my commitment here, it wasn't just to swim, but to swim for Michigan State. Because I was sold on the idea that no matter the problem, Michigan State students and administrations would work together to find a solution. But for the past 2 years, I've yet to see that attitude from this board. Whether it be the snide remarks about how we were never fast enough, yet neglecting the academic achievements that have been recognized on a national level, to the refusal to engage with the alumni that have worked so hard to bring back this program. And I also want to mention, just a few days ago, Michigan State posted about celebrating Title IX, yet you decide to pursue a lawsuit to the Supreme Court asking them to make it easier to limit opportunities for women. Is this what the great Michigan State is? Listen, I'm tired of coming to these board meetings. I'm tired of hearing how much of our commitment's in admiration to you. I didn't come here to be an admiration. I came to be a swimmer. And despite your words of encouragement, you refused to act on something that you broke. It's almost been 2 years. And I'm still left wondering, where's the Spartans will?
Mark Tarquini, followed by Rachel Holt.
Good morning. My name is Mark Tarquini. I'm a senior project manager with McLaren Healthcare. I graduated from MSU with a degree in philosophy in 2004, earned my MBA in 2015, and my product management professional certificate in July. I traveled today from Lake Orion to speak to you in support of the reinstatement of the men's and women's swimming and diving teams. I've emailed many of you multiple times voicing my support. I came to the April 22nd trustee meeting to stand with the swim and dive athletes. I did not swim at MSU, and I have no direct connection to the program. I swam across the street at East Lansing High School from 1995 to 1999. We swam at McDonald Middle School because at the time our high school pool was too shallow to host a meet. It did not matter where we swam, as long as the pool we had could host a meet. When I lived in Fremont, Michigan, I was an assistant volunteer swim coach for the middle school students. My years on a swim team transformed me as an individual, and the friendships I made from those teams last to today. The individuals leading this fight to try and reinstate the swim and dive program here at MSU are some of the most outstanding individuals I have ever encountered. The swimming and diving program helps produce individuals that make positive contributions to our society. We have a working pool, and we have the potential for an amazing new pool. The decision 2 years ago to eliminate the program still baffles me. It baffles me even more when I learn the facts obtained by the reinstatement group, facts that seem to void any of the reasons cited for the elimination of the team in the beginning. It is disheartening to continue to read bad press about our university. Let's end the Title IX woes and spending of litigation resources by reinstating the women's swimming and diving team, and let's bring back the men's team. It seems odd to me that MSU would celebrate its Title IX record when there's an active lawsuit going on right now. It also looks just as poor as having swimming pool references made by our Spartan football program, and we don't even have a swim and dive team right now. It doesn't make sense that incredible communities like East Lansing and my own Lake Orion now and those surrounding them have outstanding pools for the local swim teams, but none of those swimmers will have any chance of swimming at MSU as it stands right now. President Stanley and the board, and I hope Athletic Director Holler can figure this out. Listen to the swim and dive group. They have a solution. They have a plan. Work together with them to put the solution into action. How can we be a university without our Olympic sports? I love the academic institution that is MSU. We have great faculty here. My family enjoys coming back for volleyball games and other events. We eat at Brody Square all the time, and I'm thrilled that the dairy store has brought back D'Antonio's Double Fudge Fake. I run 5Ks through campus every time I come back to town for work, and I will do that today. It is never too late to right a wrong. The athletes are still here. Let them swim and dive. Bring back swimming and diving. Spartans will go green. Thank you.
Rachel Holt, followed by Peter Corsetti.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Rachel Holt, and I was a varsity swimmer here at Michigan State from 1990 to 1994. Today, I'm not only a mom of two amazing teenage girls who also happen to be very talented swimmers. I'm also an age group coach on the club team where they compete in Grand Rapids. I'm here today because when Michigan State decided to cut its swimming and diving program, it left a void of opportunity in an incredibly large, very talented pool of young athletes, my daughters included. Competitive swimming is a huge sport in Michigan. Did you know there are currently close to 10,000 kids registered to swim year-round in the state? We, as club teams, create vast amounts of incredibly fast kids who dream of the opportunity to compete on the big stage and stay here in Michigan. There are currently only 3 Division I schools for these young women to aspire to compete at, and 2 for men. These swimmers and divers have had their opportunities slashed and will be taking their talent and money and going elsewhere just for the opportunity to swim or dive during their college years. Let's be clear. We swim and dive in college not to become professional athletes. We do it because we love it and because it's this sport that has given us the life skills to be amazing students and professionals. I know from personal experience, as well as watching my own daughters, when they are swimming, they are better students. They set priorities and they know how to manage their time because they want to be successful in both arenas, and that takes dedication and perseverance. Please don't rob them of the same opportunities I had. I also wanted to speak about the void that currently exists in the Michigan swimming and diving community around proper aquatics facilities. In other words, a 50-meter pool with indoor diving towers and spectator space. With the abrupt closure of the outdoor 50-meter pool here, there is no longer a facility in the mid-Michigan area to serve the local community to train or compete. As a matter of fact, this past summer, the 13 and over Michigan Age Group State Championships had to be held in Indiana. There are 6 other indoor regulation facilities that were either already booked or had already hosted so many meets that they just couldn't take on another one. The 12 and under kids couldn't even have a long course championship meet because they could only find one 25-yard pool willing to host. The sheer opportunity that this university has that is they are missing out on by not building a proper aquatics facility with a 50-meter competition pool with indoor diving towers and spectator space big enough to host championship meets is very short-sighted. Every club in the area would pay to rent long course space to train, and teams would be clamoring to host their meets here. It would be such a benefit to the local community here, as well as the entire state of Michigan. Not to mention, all of those amazing swimmers and divers we have here in this state of Michigan would love to bring their money and represent Michigan State as Spartans on the Big Ten Division I stage. Michigan State has an opportunity to shine brightly in this community by bringing back its swimming and diving team and welcoming them to a new, beautiful facility. I hope they will capitalize on it and do what is right for the future Spartans out there. Thank you.
Peter Corsetti, followed by Mike Bailo.
Hello, my name is Peter Corsetti, and I'm a senior representing the 101st Michigan State Swimming and Diving Team. Less than a year ago, I was at this very podium speaking to you all about this very topic. And while a lot has changed in the world throughout the past year, one thing still hasn't: the decision to discontinue Michigan State swimming and diving programs. Over the past year, myself, my teammates, and countless alumni have made every effort possible to work with all of you, your administrators, and your staff, to find a solution to bring back this historic program. However, for each and every one of our efforts, messages were ignored, doors were shut, or inexplicable opposition was given directly from those we are supposed to call fellow Spartans. From my perspective, the original narrative for the discontinuation of our team, a lack of funds, and a proper facility is no longer valid. Over the past year, revenues from football and basketball ticket sales have returned to pre-pandemic levels. The Big Ten, which includes MSU, signed a TV deal set to double current revenue to almost $100 million per year. The new recreational facility, set to be built on campus in the near future, will include a new state-of-the-art 50-meter pool. Furthermore, we have garnered the support of the alumni in the form of pledges and gifts to assist with necessary funds upon reinstatement in the event additional funds are necessary. Our team has been ready and willing since day one to find a solution. However, I cannot make the same statement about those representing Michigan State University. On a personal note, I came to Michigan State University to be a Spartan, both academically and athletically. When I think back to my decision to attend MSU, I'm often met with the feeling of regret and feeling of missed opportunities. Regret for the loss of my athletic career and the loss of an opportunity to follow in the footsteps of great MSU swimmers before me, like Scott Piper or Peyton Woods. Spartan swimmers who made a difference by excelling academically and athletically, leading by example and embodying the values everyone at this institution should internalize. For me, that was one of the determining factors why I chose Michigan State over other universities. To the board, if nothing else, I wanted you to hear this. I came here to be a Spartan, Michigan State student athlete, to act and uphold the values of what it means to be a Spartan. We have been coming here for the past 22 months, and you have listened but taken zero action. Now is the time to step up. Now is the time to reinstate Michigan State swimming and diving. Thank you.
Mike Bailo, followed by Theodore Golden.
Good morning, everybody. I just came here today to say a few, not to really speak to the board, but to put some things in the public record, to speak some truths. And I assume at Michigan State University, that's one of our highest callings, is to illuminate the truth. I was last year on June 24th at the Board of Trustee meeting to talk about things like the swim and dive team, the budget, the Title IX suit. And I want to say what's changed since then. Just 2 months ago, quite a bit. The Big Ten expansion is now of record, with the two Los Angeles schools coming to the Big Ten, with the associated TV contract, which is going to provide anywhere from $30 or $40 or even $50 million in incremental revenue to MSU's athletic budget, depending on which article you read. The point is, it's knee-buckling money. It's the largest TV athletic contract in history. On July 20th, four of us, myself, Tom Munley, Jim Thurston, and Kayla Williams, appeared with members of MSU Advancement to talk about the plan to fund the return of the swim team. That was 50 days ago, and we've yet to hear any reply. Rebecca Surian and Vivian Lung were kind enough to meet with us at President Stanley's direction. We still haven't heard a darn thing. On August the 9th, federal judge Halla Jarboe ruled in Grand Rapids that Michigan State was, in fact, highly likely in violation of Title IX by having a participation gap of 31 athletes, and Alan Haller has until October 9th to come up with his compliance plan and how he's going to deal with that. What bothers me is that there's still been no dialogue, and I said I was going to talk about the budget today. What I found out is that the Munn Ice Arena project was kicked off at a cost of $14 million and ended up costing $26. That's $14 to $26, and the athletic department is on the hook for paying debt service on that $12 million. And the football building, which has a $67 million price tag, has only been funded to the tune of about $15 million so far. So I want to ask, how is anyone okay with fighting a federal lawsuit against the women swimmers of Michigan State University while going into deficit spending mode on two programs that have nothing to do with women, which we all love? There's no bigger football fan than this guy. But MSU is more than just football. Was swim and dive cut because MSU was short on these projects? And everything I've said to you is a fact, so now I'm going to give you one more. I had to sit there on July 20th and listen to Scott Eldredge, who's the lead attorney for Michigan State, lie to a federal judge and say that there was no hope of bringing the program back this year because we could never have a schedule. When he made that statement, only one team had even posted a schedule on its website, and I have here, and I'm going to leave it with you, I'll email it to you, we have already made a schedule for this year with dates and teams that have confirmed they would swim against us, including the Ohio State Buckeyes, who said you can come down anytime. Lastly, there's this book, Through the Red Banks of the Red Cedar, written by Maya Washington and a movie of the associated name. I had the good fortune of meeting Miss Washington this summer, and she spoke eloquently about what Title IX meant to her and what a trailblazer her father was. MSU of 1960s was a trailblazer. MSU of 2022 is going in the wrong direction, and it's up to us to put it in the right direction. We have this power. I hope to God that we do it. Thank you.
Theodore Golden via Zoom.
Speaking remotely, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Go to www.tagolden.com to read the speech. Trustee Jefferson, I feel that you are a superstar in legal ethics. I read part of your excellent book, Legal Ethics for the Real World. You have spoken out about legal ethical issues. Your resume is very impressive. I will not vote for you in the November election. On December 18, 2020, you read a prepared speech at a MSU Board of Trustees meeting. It was a Colin Powell-like moment. As most of you recall, the late Colin Powell was a superstar in his field and the Secretary of State in 2003. In February 2003, he gave a very powerful speech before the United Nations stating that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. This was not true. Colin Powell is remembered for the act he most regretted. In December 18, 2020, you stated concerning Nasser, the best resources for understanding who knew what and when and what steps were taken in response are the following documents, all publicly available: the September 1, 2020 memorandum to the U.S. Office for Civil Rights regarding Boris Nasser Employee Action Review. On October 30, 2020, 2 months before your speech, I stated at a MSU Board of Trustees meeting that the MSU memorandum contained misrepresentations on page 38 concerning unethical MSU attorney Christine Moore. Page 38 stated that Moore in 2014 adequately responded
investigated a complaint against NASA. The truth is, Moore was admonished for numerous ethical lapses in 2014 by the Michigan Attorney Grievance Commission. Trustee Jefferson, you regret your Colin Powell-like moment. Trustee Jefferson, will you criticize and fire Moore like the FBI criticized and fired their agents involved with complaints against NASA in 2015? Had Moore acted properly in 2015, the FBI would not have been involved in 2015. Thank you.
That is all.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke today. As I start my fourth year as president, I'm reminded that I came to MSU with a commitment to prioritize the health and safety of our community. This morning, I'd like to pause for just a moment to outline our progress as we strive to improve our campus culture and our prevention and education efforts around relationship violence and sexual misconduct. By the time I arrived in August 2019, many very important steps had already been taken to address systemic and historical problem areas. By working with the Relationship Violence and Sexual Misconduct Advisory Group, reviewing the data from the Spring 2019 No More Campus Survey, and meeting directly with survivors, I was able to work with a number of individuals to map out additional changes and improvements. In November 19, I appointed two RBSM advisors, Professor Rebecca Campbell and now Deputy Chief Andrea Mumford, who report directly to me to provide regular guidance and make strategic recommendations, and their efforts have proved invaluable. In 2019, we, meaning the university, created the Center for Survivors Crisis Chat and staffed it with volunteers 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have added dozens of staff physicians to offices across campus advancing our RBSM prevention work. This office has grown from 15 individuals to more than 46. In 2020, we launched a first-of-its-kind program on a college campus, the Sexual Assault Healthcare Program, providing free 24/7 first response medical care to survivors, both from our campus and in the community. We established the Climate and Response Unit within our prevention office to promote healing and culture change following incidents or investigations of sexual harassment or misconduct. And we established a victim-centered, trauma-informed interview space for law enforcement to conduct interviews with survivors who wish to report sexual assault. 2021 was another productive year with the launch of our institution-wide RBSM strategic plan, which includes a comprehensive set of initiatives for a prevention-focused and trauma-informed approach to RBSM. We also created the Michigan State University Police Department Community Support Bureau, which consists of special victim and community care units. We made it possible to revoke emeritus status and other honors and awards in cases of faculty misconduct. Finally, this year we launched a Support More initiative to provide guidance for how to respond to RBSM disclosures in a manner that is helpful to survivors and to promote campus-related resources and services. We've completed two rounds of reports from Cozen O'Connor, an outside law firm with expertise in Title IX compliance, which stated that investigations by our Office of Institutional Equity are fair, impartial, and thorough. And we updated the discipline and dismissal of tenured faculty for cause policy and expanded the staff at MSU Safe Place. In short, there's been a unified commitment, starting from the Board of Trustees and moving across all of our campus to achieving the highest standards of care and safety, preventing misconduct and supporting those who experience RBSM issues in a trauma-informed manner. And moving forward, we will remain steadfast in advancing this important work. This academic year, for example, we will carefully review the 2022 No More Campus Survey material, which will provide crucial information for continuing to positively transform the culture related to sexual misconduct in MSU. We will develop new professional standards policy collaboratively between university leadership and academic governance, to further foster a culture of respect and belonging. This summer, with the leadership of the two RBSM advisors, we began work to change the organizational structure of our OCR office, bringing in an outside consultant to map and improve the process flow, and launching our search for a new OCR leader while elevating the position to a vice presidential level. What are the results of all this work? Well, in what is preliminary data from our most recent campus survey, we are seeing reductions in the percentages of women reporting they've experienced some form of sexual misconduct, a highly encouraging outcome. We are also seeing a recovery of trust in the institution. Separate research from Edelman shows significant increases in the number of alumni who highly trust the university, from 54% in 2020 to 67% in 2022, and a significant drop in the number who distrust the university, from 18% to 10%. We know we still have much work to do, but I'm so grateful to many staff, faculty, and leaders who are working so hard to foster a safe and inclusive campus community for all. And I encourage all of you to visit MSU's Our Commitment webpage to learn more about our efforts. The health and safety of our community was on my mind as we started the fall semester and welcomed our largest ever first-year class. I thoroughly enjoyed meeting students during fall move-in and at activities like the International Student Ice Cream Social, the Migrant Student Services Camp Program Reception, and of course, participation. I posted many pictures with students and their families and got to learn about their path to MSU. Having a welcoming campus is so important, and I want to thank everyone across the university community who volunteered to assist arriving students and produce the fall welcome events that start the year on such a wonderful note. That includes the fall convocation, where Provost Woodruff and others produced an inspirational induction ceremony for our newest Spartans. Provost Woodruff, by the way, is calling in today because she's in Cambridge, Massachusetts, for induction into the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. We'll hear more later, but it's a great honor for her and the university to be associated with that prestigious scholarly organization. As I mentioned earlier, we welcomed a record incoming class of about 9,800 first-year students, which is also among our most diverse. That comes behind a record 57,898 applications. This year, we're welcoming more international students and more than 1,400 transfer students, and we look forward to benefiting from the unique experiences they bring. Our student numbers that I just reported are based on paid deposits, and of course, we'll be able to tally an official enrollment count after tuition refunds close on September 29th. But in an era where many colleges and universities are struggling to maintain enrollments, these numbers speak to the continued confidence in the quality and value of a Michigan State University degree. And we're only getting better and more competitive. Forbes last week mentioned MSU among universities surging in their rankings. And earlier this summer, Shanghai ranking ranked 7 Michigan State academic disciplines in the top 25 in the world, with 2 in the top 5. Education ranked number 2 for the 3rd consecutive year, and communication ranked number 3 for the 2nd straight year. Here's another signal that we're heading in the right direction. This summer, we closed out a record-setting year for fundraising, totaling more than $284 million in cash and gift commitments. Our Spartan community is investing in us like never before, with giving from alumni growing more than 26% from the previous year. More than 170,000 individual gifts were made to MSU last year, and nearly 9,700 individuals contributed for the first time. And with our strategic plan now guiding our efforts toward greater excellence and impact in the year 2030 and beyond, I believe we're in a very good position to continue to support the success of Spartans and the world we live in. I often refer to Michigan State University as Michigan's State University because nobody is more active in supporting the citizens and communities in Michigan than Michigan State. Whether it's through the services of MSU Extension in every county, our 900-plus medical education clinical affiliate sites across the state, or the countless service and research programs engaging Spartans with our community, MSU is there for the people of Michigan and beyond. That service is acknowledged in this year's fiscal year state budget. In addition to operating funds to MSU, it included $53 million for much-needed upgrades to our dairy cattle teaching and research center and our greenhouse facilities, both of which support crucial Michigan economic sectors. Today's agenda includes resolutions authorizing us to begin planning for upgrading these important facilities, and I want to thank the legislature and Governor Whitmer for making this happen. We saw many examples of MSU's commitment to Michigan over the summer, including celebrating the 100th anniversary of WKAR. Our strong partnership with WKAR is so important for connecting people with powerful ideas that inspire positive change within our community. We saw MSU's commitment to the state again when we received a $10.5 million federal grant with the Merit Network to bring high-speed broadband services to underserved homes and businesses in Michigan. And when we joined a multi-state higher education network to address regional and national priorities for semiconductor and microelectronic research, education, and workforce development. This program will be critical to the health of Michigan's 21st century technology and manufacturing economy, including the auto industry. And speaking of the auto industry, we'll be represented in Detroit next week at the Automobility Program before the North American International Auto Show. We'll join our University Research Corridor partners to showcase our technology programs, research and development, and MSU's connected mobility ecosystem. We're proud to lead the nation's university innovation clusters in the number of mobility industry graduates we produce, keeping the state in the front of mobility innovation. The MSU electronic autonomous bus will also be part of the URC's display. So it's fitting that today's research presentation will be on battery technology for electrified transportation. We also recently saw continued confidence in MSU's ability to innovate for a better future with an over $10 million Energy Frontiers research grant for the Department of Energy's Office of Science alongside Argonne National Laboratory and Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. Our new Center for Catalysis and Biomimetic Confinement will investigate novel means to produce useful compounds for energy and other applications in an environmentally sustainable way. Finally, I want to mention how I saw MSU's statewide engagement up close during my road trip last month to Michigan's beautiful Upper Peninsula. Michigan State has been active in research and service in the UP for more than 120 years. Since the COVID-19 pandemic limited my travel over the past couple years, I was eager to visit, tour some of MSU's facilities, and meet Spartans and others north of the bridge. I enjoyed tours of the Ag Bioresearch Forestry Innovation Center in Escanaba, the College of Human Medicine's Marquette campus, and met the UP Extension educators in our Nagani office. I'm proud of the scope, scale, and impact of our activities in the UP, and the visit underscored the importance we place on serving the entire state. I want to conclude my remarks today by circling back to the great start of the year we've been having and the centrality of student success in all we do, which our strategic plan reinforces. Students are the heart of the university, and welcoming them back is a real highlight. I want to now play a very brief social media video we've been sharing with our Spartan community.
Welcome back, Spartans. Welcome back to the bells of Beaumont Tower, the beauty of the Red Cedar, the energy of the Spartan Day. Welcome back to all of our 1,042 clubs, the students starting their first day, students starting their last first day. Welcome back to Ivy Cover Halls, to Spartan traditions and endless opportunities. Finding your place, your people, yourself. To leaving your mark on campus, just like the Spartans who came before you. Welcome back to Jaden and Peyton, to Marcus, to Clara, to Sparty, to Isabella, to Andre, to our frisbee catching wonder dog. To you. Campus is special because of you. And we are so much more with you here. Welcome home, Spartans.
Welcome back, students, and to everyone here and all those listening. I encourage you to register to vote if you have not done it already. And once you've registered your vote, I encourage you to make a plan of how you're going to vote as well. So with that, let's turn to the rest of today's agenda. Our gift, grant, and contract report, Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage.
Thank you. Chairperson Byram, members of the Board of Trustees, I request approval of the awards found in the gift, grant, and contract report. The report period is May 28, 2022 through August 11, 2022. The total value of this for this period is $192,019,746.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve the gift, grant, and contract report?
So moved.
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries. We will now move to our research presentation, which will be presented by Vice President Doug Gage.
Thank you. Dr. Chen-Cheng Fang is an assistant professor in the Department of Chemical Engineering and Materials Sciences in the College of Engineering. She joined Michigan State University in the fall of 2020. She completed her undergraduate studies in material science and engineering at Zhejiang University in China, then went on to obtain her Master's of Philosophy in Innovative Technology Leadership from Hong Kong University of Science and Technology, with a concentration in energy and environment. Dr. Fang earned her PhD in Material Science and Engineering from the University of California, San Diego, where she also completed postdoctoral research in the Department of Nano Engineering. She just received Materials Research Society Graduate Student Award in 2019, and most importantly was named to the MIT Technology Review's 35 Innovators Under 35 in the World. So that's a remarkable achievement. And it's even more remarkable because she joined us in the fall of 2020 and had about 5 months absent from her lab during that period. So that's a great recognition for our faculty. Her research has answered some of the most critical scientific questions on lithium battery metal failure mechanisms and pioneered the principal approaches towards solving this issue regarding safety, cycle life, and fast charging. Her research group focuses on developing multi-scale quantitative characterization tools and designing advanced materials and manufacturing methods for next-generation energy storage devices. She'll be discussing more about this work in her presentation this morning. Please welcome Dr. Fong.
Thanks, Dr. Gage, for the nice introduction. Today, I'll be talking about a new type of battery that can enable our future of electrified transportation. Actually, the modern lithium-ion batteries have significantly reshaped our daily life in many ways, from how we work, how we communicate, to how we drive. The global EV market has been projected to reach $1,000 billion by 2030. In the United States, as you can see from this figure, it is projected that the EV market share will increase from today's about 5% to about 30% in 2030. So this is based on an assumption that the battery energy density will increase about 5% per year. However, if a disruptive battery technology would be available in the next few years, we can reasonably expect this linear increasing trend to become exponential and really enable many of the emerging concepts, such as the power drones for goods transportation and the very fancy electric airplanes that can vertically take off and land for our daily use. So the vision of the electrified transportation will not only significantly improve our life quality, but also is a critical step to reduce the human carbon footprint and to fight climate change. So in the vision of the future smart cities, actually battery will be one of the most important infrastructures to enable the renewable energy, such as the solar and wind energy, by providing reliable energy storage solutions, which will significantly increase the efficiency and enhance the resilience of our modern cities. But why is it so difficult to develop a better battery? So this figure summarizes the development of modern commercial batteries. The lithium-ion technology we are using today, as indicated by the blue curve, was actually developed 30 years ago, and it's reaching its theoretical energy density limitation. But it's still not satisfactory for the electrified transportation application, which requires the highest performance of battery in terms of energy, power, cycle life, fast charging, and low temperature capabilities, cost, and safety. The theoretical calculation also tells us the batteries that are built with lithium metal, which my lab is focusing on, are the ultimate choice to double the energy density of today's lithium-ion technology. That means we will be able to double the mileage per charge in our EVs using the new type of lithium metal battery. That will fundamentally address our mileage anxiety when we drive an EV. So what is a lithium metal battery? Let's first look into today's lithium ion battery. So inside the battery, the lithium ions actually shuttle back and forth inside the battery, and the electrons go through the external circuit to provide electricity. So inside this lithium-ion battery, the graphite was used as the anode to host the lithium ions that comes from the cathode side. So based on a mechanism called intercalation chemistry, so that we can safely use our battery. However, this kind of intercalation chemistry using graphite is also the limitation for energy density, fast charging, and low temperature performance. In fact, just by simply remove the graphite, the battery can still function. So in this new type of mechanism, we directly electrochemically deposit the lithium ions that comes from the cathode side to the anode side to form lithium metal. So this is the so-called lithium metal battery. by looking at the schematic, you can easily feel that the lithium, by removing the graphite, our batteries can be much lighter, thinner, and easier for manufacturing. So now we are going to solve the problems on the lithium metal side. So lithium metal is believed to be the holy grail anode because lithium is the lightest solid on Earth, and it has the lowest negative potential, which means you can get the highest possible voltage from a single cell by using lithium anode. And it also has the ultra-high capacity that is more than 10 times higher than that of the graphite. However, because the lithium metal is so reactive, it has a lot of problems in our practical application in a battery. So during the charging process, the lithium can easily grow as the dendrite, which can cause short circuit and explosion of our battery. And during the discharge process, because of the formation of the so-called inactive lithium, the cycling efficiency can be very low. So the cycle life probably can be, you can only cycle your battery for at most 100 cycles. That's not applicable. So actually, my group focuses on addressing those most challenging problems associated with lithium metal in order to enable their practical application. We were able to identify the key problem to be solved from a whole complicated failure mechanism. That is, how can we control the lithium growth from the dendritic to fully dense? Our previous research built a quantitative morphology performance relationship. It tells us if the lithium grows as whiskers or dendrites during the charging process, the cycling efficiency and cycle life of our battery can be very low. However, if we were able to achieve a fully dense lithium deposition with the ideal columnar morphology, we can significantly improve our cycling efficiency and get long cycle life. Then the question is, how can we get this ideal morphology? Our recent research actually identified the stack pressure as a powerful tuning knob to precisely control the lithium growth morphology during the battery operation. As you can see, we can, by optimizing the stack pressure, we can tune the morphology from the left-hand side whiskers all the way to the fully dense lithium. And these two images shows that we achieved the ideal morphology we predicted. This picture is actually probably represents the highest level of manipulation of electrochemistry lithium deposition in human history. So what does this morphology mean in a real battery? I hope this schematic can help you better understand. So without regulation, the lithium metal can easily grow as dendrite to short-circuit the battery, and that can cause explosion. Our approach using the stack pressure to control the to control the lithium growth during the battery operation can significantly densify and make the lithium cycling very reversibly. So this means we can use our high-energy lithium metal battery safely. More exciting is our recent research further identified that the stack pressure can be a powerful tuning knob to enable the fast charging capability of such appealing high-energy batteries. So this is part of our ongoing research. Probably you will hear more exciting news in the near future. So actually, this is a white paper released by DOE about 5 years ago. At that time, they assessed that lithium metal may not be practical for fast charging because of the traditional concerns about the dendrite growth. Our recent research just proved that we were able to fully eliminate the dendrite growth. That means we are redefining and really enabling the holy grail lithium metal battery by synergistically working on these four aspects, from the quantitative fundamental understanding to developing new materials and the new cell engineering approaches, as well as new manufacturing methods. So I want to highlight a news that many of you may already know, that General Motors is bringing $2.6 billion to build a battery manufacturing plant at Lansing area by 2024. This will create 5,000 well-paid jobs related to EVs and batteries. And my research group has built long-term collaboration with several teams in General Motors. And what's more exciting is MSU mobility is actually growing very rapidly. And coupling these rising resources, opportunities, and the world-leading research we are conducting now, I believe the battery research and the manufacturing at MSU is ready to take off. In the next few years, we will train talented workforce, especially leaders, for this rising field. Last but not least, I want to introduce my group to all of you. I'm glad that my students are enjoying their research in my group very much, and we do believe that the Holy Grail battery is no longer a dream. We are working together to make it happen at MSU. Thank you for your attention. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much for this research and how exciting it is because Michigan is to put the world on wheels and our rich history is in auto manufacturing. And we will lose that legacy if we can't make the shift to the future. And the future is clearly electric vehicles and battery technology. And by your research and your colleagues and the investment here, whether it is the chip technology, it is the battery, electric vehicles, will position not only Michigan State University to be a leader in the future, but will enshrine the state of Michigan in its rightful place in our rich automotive history. So thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Other questions?
Yes.
What, Dr. Fang, this is fascinating, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your presentation. What problems or barriers do you need to solve get this to commercial application that you're working on?
Oh, that's a very good question. Actually, my working philosophy is trying to bridge the gap between the lab and the industry. Actually, those morphology, very high level of control of the lithium we achieved in the lab is in a relatively small scale. But like our battery is probably the coin cell is only this size. But in the EV battery, the battery pack, the single cell can be very large. They are consists of several layers, and for the even larger battery pack, they can be this size. So I think the homogeneity of in the manufacturing, as well as the safety control, would be a concern if we want to translate this technology from the lab to the real application.
Is the disposition of lithium an environmental hazard or concern, and what would be the average life of a lithium battery that you're producing?
Oh, lithium, you mean the cycle life of lithium metal batteries?
Yeah.
Actually, our target is for 500 cycles use. That means if, for example, if we can, and that it brings a lot of impact if we can increase the mileage per charge. So actually, if you just charge, if we can reach 600 miles per charge, that means probably you just charge once a month. So 500 cycles means you can use many years. And I think in terms of the environmental impact, one of the projects in my group is the battery recycling. We're trying to find a more environmental friendly way to recycle the spent batteries without the impact of the environment and really collect those very valuable elements such as cobalt and nickel from the spent batteries for reuse.
Right. Yeah.
There's a significant secondary market now for these batteries. So after they've been used in transportation where you have to deal with high discharge rates, which could lead to the dendrites you're trying to balance and work against, there's a huge secondary market growing in how we can store an energy that is converted from, say, sunlight to electricity or wind to electricity and use that to buffer our power system. So there's turning out to be a great second life to it, and then eventually the recycling will happen.
Great. I mean, always the issue is trying to figure out what to prioritize to get the market through the concept. So I don't know if that's a primary or whether the initial battery is application is the focal point, but good luck. That's a technology disruptor.
Other questions?
Sure, absolutely. Because I understood some of it, most. I did look up dendrite, which still unclear. I'm not, probably need to take class. But I appreciate your research. I just have a couple of practical questions.
Uh-huh.
So when you get on the plane, it will, the announcement will be to turn off and take and remove all lithium batteries. Is there a reason for this?
Oh, yeah. Actually, yes. So the current lithium-ion batteries, during the biggest challenges because of the intercalation chemistry I just mentioned, and the lithium can easily grow on the graphite as well. But in that environment, because the electrolyte is designed for graphite, not for lithium metal, so it's particularly easy to grow dendrite in our current battery. So it's and the electrolyte we're using is organic solvents. They are very flammable. So if you're charging your battery in an airplane, there is a risk that they may explode.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's you could have just led with that. Thanks for the whole explanation. Because, you know, they say to turn off your phone, but really, you can. You can keep your phone on. But not that. That's a good idea to take that out. But I don't have a lithium battery. So the other thing, too, it seemed like the Jetsons is upon us. Can am I going to have a Jetson? You probably don't. You too young.
What is
it? You like Jetsons. So it's a cartoon?
Wow.
So I am old. You do know the Jetsons?
I know the Jetsons.
Okay, okay. The Jetsons, you get to get up, get into a little a plane and ride around. We're going to be able to do this pretty soon. Is that what you're telling me?
I hope so.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah,
that's our goal.
Those are all my questions. I appreciate your work. Looking forward to my plane.
Any other questions?
I just wanted to make a comment that I really enjoy just watching you talk about your work because you are like so excited and I can like feel the passion that you have. Like you gave me goosebumps, even like. Dr. Remus, I don't necessarily understand all that you're saying, but I can feel the excitement and that we're close to something. I just really appreciate your work you're doing, so thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So great presentation. Thank you so much. I think everybody enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I think you made it chemistry interesting.
Yeah.
I know the provost finds it very interesting as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, thank you so much.
So we're now going to move on to personnel actions and information reports from Provost Woodruff. She's calling in, as I mentioned.
Trustees, I present for approval the items on the September 2022 list of personnel actions. I present for approval the following 10-year faculty appointments: Michelle R. Lloyd, PhD, Red Cedar Distinguished Associate Professor, Department of History, with tenure effective August 16, 2022. Maximilian Prusha, PhD, Walter N. Penske, Endowed Professor, Department of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology, with tenure effective January 1, 2023. Kuwa Wong, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Chemistry, with tenure effective August 16, 2022. Galvin Rumbaugh, PhD, Small Family Endowed Professor, Department of Pediatrics and Human Development, with tenure effective January 1, 2023. Weiwei Shi, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Chemistry, with tenure, effective August 16, 2022. Chalani Wallaby, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Plant, Soil, and Microbial Sciences, with tenure, effective September 12, 2022. I'm also pleased to recommend Judith Whipple, PhD, Donald J. Bowersock, and Robert W. Sewell, Professor and Interim Associate Dean for Eli Broad College of Business, for change in title to interim dean, effective August 12, 2022. The action includes the recommendation of Rebecca T. Barber, PhD, for the appointment of Vice President for Financial Planning Analysis, effective October 1, 2022. The action also includes the recommendation of Thomas Izzo, head coach, men's basketball, intercollegiate athletics, subject to contract with effective dates of August 22, 2022 to June 30, 2027. It is recommended that the title of Associate Vice President for Civil Rights and Title IX Education and Compliance be changed to Vice President for Civil Rights and Title IX Education and Compliance, and that all applicable policy documents be revised to reflect the change in title, effective upon the completion of the search with a successful appointee. It is recommended that the position of Senior Associate Vice President of Health Sciences be created, effective September 9, 2022. The action includes the recommendation of Norman E. Hubbard, MBA, Senior Advisor to the Dean for the change in title to Senior Associate Vice President of Health Sciences, effective September 9, 2022. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel action. President Stanley, that concludes my report.
So is there a motion to approve the personnel actions?
There has been a request to amend the personnel actions with regard to the interim associate dean for Eli Brogue College of Business. So I would like that matter to be pulled for a separate vote.
There's a motion to pull
that. I'll support that.
Seconded. Any discussion?
I believe that there's a signature page, and maybe Mr. Quinn will pipe in, but I don't believe that it's appropriate for a motion, but there is a signature page that removes it. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay, so we'll draw that request for a motion. Okay. So that's done. So let's vote now on, is there any further discussion? So let's vote now on which comes first in priority to vote on?
The main personnel action.
The main personnel action. So let's continue with the main personnel actions. Any discussion on that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion passes. Now we'll hear on the promotion of the appointment of interim dean for Judith Whipple. That motion has been made. Is there a motion to approve that?
Support. Yeah, I'll move the motion.
Yeah, and support it. Okay, is there a discussion?
What's being moved?
This is on the interim dean appointment, Judith Whipple.
So it's been extracted.
Yes.
Extracted. Any discussion?
Yeah, I have a couple of comments. I will be voting no, not anything with regard to the actual candidate. I just believe that the administration should pause on this appointment. I believe that the provost has the authority to move forward with the actually the selection of even the candidate for purposes of an interim basis. And I do so because the board back on August 30th, 2022, asked for an independent review of the administration's decision to remove the previous dean of the Broad College of Business. And I think that that investigation should go on. It should be completed. I hope it will be completed very timely, and I mean shortly. And so I think this decision could have been paused for that basis, and that's why I'm voting no.
And if I may just add the kind of the counter voice here, and I do respect your opinion, Dan, but I do believe that Eli Broad College of Business needs an academic head, and that it is very appropriate that we put an interim dean in place, and I will be supporting this resolution.
I will be voting no on this resolution and share the same comments as Trustee Kelly. We have an ongoing investigation, and we had asked for certain things of the administration which were not accomplished, which I felt were very reasonable in the circumstances, to give a longstanding dean who's put his heart and soul into this university a due process hearing with a number of discrepancies. And I feel it's the Spartan way, quite honestly. I think it's just fair. I have nothing against Ms. Judith Whipple. I mean, she was promoted to a position, I believe, by Dean Gupta on June 1st, so he recognizes that she's a great person and a great asset to the university. But at this juncture, I don't see the hurry, and, you know, we are trying to move an investigation. There's actually several investigations going on, but we need to pause, and we need to do the right thing in this matter, and I don't see the need to rush through it, so I will be voting no.
Other comments?
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment. I will be voting in support of this. In my view, the Broad College of Business needs a dean at the helm. There is not one currently appointed, and we have an interim that has been presented to us by the provost, and I will be voting to support it. That should have no reflection in any way on anything else other than that very action. In the absence of the appointment, it is something that, pursuant to our bylaws and policies, that comes to the board for approval. And so I will be approving her appointment. She's qualified for the role. And in the vacancy, the college needs leadership. So that's why I'll be supporting it.
Any other comments? Hearing none. Provost, do you have anything you want to add?
You Judith Whipple is an outstanding leader for the College of Business and to ensure continuity of academic and business functions, as well as accreditation standards and the requirements of the Rhodes College of Business. I do reinforce that I am pleased to recommend Judith Whipple, PhD, Donald J. Bowerstock, Robert Deverell Sewell, Professor, to the position of interim dean for the Eli Rhodes College of Business.
Okay, we'll go proceed to a vote then. There's no other discussion. Do we want a voice vote or
a roll call?
Roll call.
Yeah.
Okay.
Trustee Byram?
Yes.
Trustee Foster?
Yes.
Trustee Kanaki Jefferson?
Yes.
Trustee Kelly?
No.
Trustee O'Keefe?
No.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Tebe?
Yes.
Trustee Vassar?
Abstain.
So that is 5 yes votes, 2 no votes, 1 abstain.
Thank you. So the motion carries. Thank you. So we will now move to committee reports and other items requiring board approval. Trustee Melanie Foster will present the Committee on Budget and Finance report.
Thank you, President Stanley. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby establishes a fund functioning as an endowment entitled Dr. Kenneth Harding Graduate Student Endowed Scholarship.
On the motion, do I have support?
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby establishes a fund functioning as an endowment entitled Thomas J. Ostrander Memorial Endowed Scholarship Fellowship in Mechanical Engineering.
Can I have support?
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby establishes a fund functioning as an endowment entitled Shinova Ramadad Graduate Fellowship in memory of Dr. Kruger and Dr. Schweitzer.
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstention? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to plan for the project entitled Dairy Facility Research and Teaching and Learning.
Have support?
Support.
Thank you.
George Smith is prepared to make comments.
Thank you very much, Trustee Foster. I appreciate President Stanley's comments and recognition of this tremendous transformational investment by the state of Michigan in facilities at Michigan State University that to allow us to execute our mission to enhance growth and economic development of Michigan agriculture, the number 2 contributor to the state's economy. So in brief, the proposed renovation of the dairy facilities will not only provide a modern environment for training the next generation of dairy professionals and a skilled workforce through programs in both the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources that will provide increased capacity for research linked to dairy production, but also more importantly, it will be linked to solving critical problems related to environmental sustainability of the dairy industry in the future and generating new sources of revenue for our producers, including technologies for conversion of animal waste into renewable energy that's applicable and economically feasible on farms of all sizes. Strategies for linking that renewable energy to charging stations for electric vehicles in rural communities. Strategies for removal of specific nutrients from animal waste, such as phosphorus and nitrogen, providing a new source of commercial fertilizer that can be applied in a home and agricultural setting. And reducing the current dependence in this country of fertilizer imports from other countries. Providing a facility that will allow us to examine the carbon footprint of a dairy production facility, including when the crops are produced, the cows, all the way to transport to the processing facilities, and looking at the effects of treatments on greenhouse gas emissions. These are all questions that are critical to the future of our dairy industry in the state, and MSU is positioned to lead in this area with the future, and that's a vision for these new facilities.
think very exciting.
Right. I think we need a research presentation on
that. Yeah. And I would love a tour.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Oh, we can do all of that.
I would love
it.
So.
Yeah, very much
we
so.
Do call it Moo You, don't we?
Yeah. Okay.
But I'd also like to thank the legislature for their bipartisan support of this project and the next one. And note that this is our first capital outlay project in maybe 5 years or so.
And Melanie, I would like to chime in too and just thank the agricultural community broadly.
Absolutely.
They came together and they supported MSU in our ask to the legislature. And they made phone calls. They did visits into offices for both the dairy barn and the greenhouse project. And that partnership with the agricultural community, I'm talking the commodity groups, I'm talking the milk producers, I'm talking all of the commodity groups as well as Michigan Farm Bureau, that really were shoulder to shoulder with MSU in this project and this ask of the legislature, the leadership of the governor. It would not have been possible without their help, because this is really for the industry. Yes, we do the research here, we educate students, but this is our land grant mission in real time. That will be, the application will be back to the agricultural industry across Michigan. So I want to thank them for their partnership and recognize it.
Good.
Thank you.
Any other comments or discussion? If not, we'll call the question. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to plan for the project entitled Greenhouse Renovation of Existing and Addition, Research Expansion and Learning.
Support.
Thank you. Discussion.
Thank you again for the opportunity. I'll be very brief. Virtually all of the, every one of the 300 commodities produced in the state of Michigan is impacted directly or indirectly by research conducted in our plant science greenhouses. We have a world-class plant science program on campus with significant impact in terms of teaching, research, and outreach, but unfortunately our facilities haven't kept pace. Revitalization of these facilities will not only allow us to increase quality and scope of research in the future, but also address problems that are critical to the future. Everyone's heard about the challenges in California with weather, access to water, et cetera. That presents an opportunity for the state of Michigan. And our research in those critical greenhouses is absolutely critical to capitalizing on that opportunity, including research on plant breeding to deal with changes in growing season, resistance to drought, temperature, emerging pests and pathogens linked to changes in weather, and research on alternative strategies for producing food in urban areas. Again, tremendous potential to revitalize our programs and position MSU for continued excellence in the plant sciences in the future through renovation of these facilities.
Thank you.
Any other comments or discussion?
I would just like to say, as someone that toured the greenhouses in February when it was snowing, I absolutely know the need that you all have these fixed. So, thank you.
Good. Let's have a vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries. We will now move to, I'm sorry, Trustee Foster.
This concludes my report.
Thank you. We will now move to the Committee on Academic Affairs, Trustee Byron.
Thank you very much. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the board hereby approves the revisions to policy 03-17-03. It's the overload pay policy shown in attachment A, and this is to conform with IRS requirements.
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the board hereby approves naming of the Recreational Sports and Fitness Center Turf Field Sports Complex Spartan Greens.
Support.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Before I make my next motion, I would like to note that Vinny Gore is here, that he can offer any comments. But let's move the next one, Vinny, and then I'll let you give some comments over here.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the board hereby approves naming the new recreational sports and fitness services facility on Cherry Lane Field, the Student Recreation and Wellness Center.
Support.
Yes, we're real excited about the naming opportunities. This was a collaborative effort with our team and students. We did a number of focus groups, surveys, and the two names that we present in front of you were the two names that the students would like for the new facilities. And the turf field, Spartan Green, is up and operating. You'll hear a little later on from one of our club members who is using that facility.
Great, thank you.
So all those in favor of the Spartan Greens naming, signify by saying aye.
No, this is the facility.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, we did the facility, we did Spartan Greens already. Okay.
Yep.
Okay, all those in favor of the Cherry Lane Field, now known as the Student Recreation Wellness Center, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
And I would just like to acknowledge that the president mentioned in his comments the provost is not here because she was being entered into the Academy of Arts and Sciences, and she actually, I hope I got that right,
American
Academy of Arts and Sciences. And she is signing in the Benjamin Franklin book.
Or the Thomas Jefferson book, they've all been members. So.
Right. And so she's signing her name in as a member of the Academy, and Michigan State University will be accompanied by her signature. So this is a really big deal. There's a little over 100 people that are being recognized today to sign that. I told her to take pictures. We want to celebrate that. And next year, President Stanley will have the same honor because he did receive the same recognition, and he will be signing in the same book. So when we talk about honorifics and elevating the prestige of the faculty and the academic side of this university, this is exactly what we're talking about. It's a very prestigious honor, and we need to celebrate that. So I wanted to make sure that I drew a little special attention for the provost today. And that will conclude my report for Academic Affairs Committee. Thank you, President.
Thank you, Trustee Garber. Now from the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, Trustee Kellogg.
Thank you. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the board hereby approve the following. A service agreement with Elijah Hamilton Ray as amended. A license agreement with ISO Therapeutics. An option agreement with Life Blood Corporation. A purchase agreement with Meadow Bloom Farms, LLC. A service agreement with Michigan Center for Rural Health. A service agreement with Mid-Michigan Research. An option agreement with Motion Glazer, Polyplastic Technologies, and Red Docks Blocks, a license agreement with Red Docks Blocks, a purchase agreement with Tucker Mays Farm, and a research agreement with Ubiquitous Energy.
Tongue twister.
Yeah, I'm glad you have to read those. I don't.
So can I have a motion?
So moved.
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
This concludes my report.
Thank you. From the Committee on Student Life and Culture, Trustee Scott.
Thanks, President Stanley. Senior Vice President Vinny Gore and Assistant Vice President Alan Shaw will now present the launch of the academic year. Yay!
I have to say, after doing this for 40 years, it's an exciting time. Every year we and so Alan and I would like to present to you some of our students as they talk about the launch of the year and what it means for them. Yesterday you heard from our student leaders about the importance of this year and looking for it, and so we want to also introduce some of our other students. So, Alan.
So thank you for this opportunity. We felt we had a great fall welcome, and we have three fantastic students who will talk a little bit more about fall welcome. Our first student is Delaney Williams, who is the station manager for the award-winning WDBM Impact Campus Radio Station. She is a junior studying journalism with a concentration in broadcasting, and she's been with the station for 2 years. So Delaney, if you could start us off.
Hello, my name is Delaney Rogers, and I am the station manager at Impact 89 FM, Michigan State's radio station, and we are located in the dorm Holden Hall and stream music 24/7. Our airwaves reach 30 miles in each direction, and we can stream online anywhere around the globe. The radio station has won the best college radio station 18 out of the last 22 years with the Michigan Association of Broadcasters, and in 2020, the College Media Association awarded us with best four-year college radio station in the nation, which was very much an honor and a reflection of our staff and volunteers. Impact has about 70 paid staff and 160 volunteers, and there are 10 volunteer teams. There's air staff, audio production, DEI, entertainment, graphics, music review, media, news, street, and sports team. And anyone can join these teams regardless of your major or experience. And as a station, we do a lot of event DJing, which means setting up tables at events like welcome events or running participation. Welcome Meet went great, and we hosted a variety of events like U-Fest, Comrade Side Welcome, Participation, where volunteers come and talk with their staff, and about 300 volunteers have signed up since then, which our media librarians are all logging into our system right now, so they're having a very busy time. And we emceed and DJed Participation this year as well, prior to other years, and with our staff being back in person from the summer, teams have begun meeting and producing content such as the media team covering FemFest this past Wednesday, which we sponsored, helped run, and plan. And we also cover local events with our news team, sports travels around the country covering and broadcasting games. Students learn how to be a DJ live and have weekly shifts. We also have talk blocks set aside on Sundays, which is, ironically have stage fright, even though we do DJ stuff and I'm behind the camera. So we also have talk blocks, which means a chunk of time is set aside on Sundays for podcasts such as the award-winning Sci-Files, which is about student research with our graduates, or the Green and White Report, which entails updates on the sports world, recaps, interviews with coaches, members, stuff like that. And that is just a handful of the wonderful things our volunteers, staff, and team is doing. Thank you.
So thanks to Delaney and the radio station. They've been very modest. They also won the Outstanding Advisor, National Advisor of the Year, which Jeremy will collect in D.C. in October. She also didn't say that they've hosted already 80 events so far this year since the beginning. So we hope they sleep and go to class. Next up, we have George Ramirez Madrigal. George is a first-generation student who is a junior studying elementary education with a Teaching English to Speakers of Other Languages endorsement, who is also an RA in Acres Hall. So he can talk a little bit about MOVEIN, as well as he's the president for Culturas de las Razas Unidas. So, George.
Good morning, board. President Stanley. Alan mentioned, I am the president of Culturas de las Razas Unidas, one of the largest Latinx organizations here on campus. We are located in Wilson Hall, room G43B. We had a successful fall welcome in Spartacipation and then Spartan Remix as well. And then as an organization ourselves, we had our own kickoff this past Tuesday with our affiliates as well. We are catering to focus more on outreach, especially with one of the most largest Latinx class incoming. We are pleased to announce that we've reached over 150 students thus far, and I'm proud of that accomplishment. And then as an RA over in Acres, understanding the communication with students on how, you know, transitional housing may affect their college experience, but at the same time navigating and helping them understand a world post-COVID, transitioning back into in-person learning. But, yeah, that's pretty much what I have for today. Thank you.
And as George mentioned, Spartan Remix closed out fall welcome last night. We had several thousand students on Munn Field. We also had the Student Veteran Resource Center opening yesterday as well, with several hundred people at the tent behind the Student Services Building. But last, as we've talked about Patrick a few times today because of the turf field Spartan Green area, but Patrick Marshall is a senior Honors College student majoring in mechanical engineering from Green River, Wyoming. He is one of our star scholars. Patrick is the treasurer of the men's club soccer team, has been a member since 2019, and has been nothing but raving since 7:30 this morning about the new fields. So I will turn it over to Patrick.
Hello. Like Dr. Shaw said, my name is Patrick Marshall, and I am the treasurer of the men's club soccer team. And I've been asked today to speak a little bit about the club's perspective on the new Service Road turf fields, which, as a few minutes ago, were renamed Spartan Greens. The bottom line is the entire team is really excited to use these fields. We started practice last week, and we absolutely love it. We used to have to play at the VetMed fields, which were narrow, short grass fields. The grass was unreliable, so we'd have a lot of twisted ankles and stuff like that throughout the season, and the grass would tend to fade as the season went on. So we also had many weather-related cancellations. We canceled about 10% of our practices last year because the fields would just get rained out. So far, these fields have been absolutely phenomenal. The turf is top grade, great drainage, and we've had no complaints so far. We also hosted our first home game last week on the new fields, and we're really excited to have a home field because what we used to have to do is travel to neighboring high schools. We'd have to rent the fields for about $400 a game. Six home games, that's $2,400 that we're saving this year, and that's $100 a member, and that's coming out of our own pockets that we're saving. So we're really excited as college students to not have to pay that money. So the bottom line is we want to say on behalf of the club soccer team, thank you for building these new turf fields, and we hope to see you at one of our home games soon. Thank you.
That concludes my report. That was a great report.
That was a great report. So we will now turn over for our liaison's report, Chairperson Byron.
Yes, and welcome to fall semester to our liaison groups. We had the privilege to, we didn't break bread together because we were still by Zoom, but we're hoping the October board meeting that we can be in person so we can break bread together. I think the face-to-face is really important. Mm-hmm. So with that, I'm going to recognize the student liaisons first. I ask that you please try to keep your comments to about 3 minutes if you can, but very much would like to hear from you this morning. So we'll start with the students and I'll go to the faculty.
In addition to my capacity as the Board of Trustees liaison, I serve in ASMSU, where I've recently been informed of concerns associated with financial aid. As of September 8th, MSU has offered 70,000 students a total amount of over $2.198 million in financial aid for the fall 2021 and spring 2022 semesters. Spartan Advantage is a program within the Office of Financial Aid, which, quote, reduces the educational loan debt of the neediest Michigan students by supplementing institutional funds and other non-loan forms of financial assistance, such that students, the costs of tuition, fees, room, board, and books are covered. However, because the program is specifically designed for the exceptionally needy based on family income, when these revocations have occurred, it has put students into more vulnerable positions than their peers. I have been in discussion with Provost Woodruff and the financial aid administrators to ensure that the university recognizes the extent of the issue in order to properly address student concerns and find solutions and minimize such instances from occurring in the future. I also look forward to working with student groups on campus and the rest of the board to improve indigenous and minoritized student relations and other aspects of campus culture. This concludes my report.
Well, thank you very much. To begin with, I just want to echo everything Stevie has said. I'm Belle Letcher. I'm the president of RHA, so on-campus things. I'm glad to say that Hall government recruitment is, well, I don't know if it's an all-time high because we don't have, like, 50 years of records, but in as of recent history, Hall government recruitment is looking really, really good, and we may very well have an active Hall government in every single hall, which I am very, very excited for. At the same time, we have our huge incoming class, and with that in mind, I actually wanted to speak to George. I can't see him, but just our RAs in general, they do so much for this university, and it's a particularly difficult year to be one with the huge incoming class of freshmen, and on top of that, transitional housing. Like, if you have a floor of nothing but freshmen, and some of them are three to a room, then your job as the person in charge of resolving disputes gets very difficult. And with this in mind, RHA is working very, very hard to recognize that RAs are constituents too. They live in the residence halls, and we care about them just as much as RAs care about the people on their floor. And as such, we are currently working with both RAs and ICAs to give them seats in RHA so that they can give their valuable input as students who are very involved in campus and in the residence halls, and at the same time, we can provide valuable representation for them. And on top of that, unrelated to that, this actually happened yesterday at the student liaison meeting. President Stanley himself offered to allow me to be involved in the finalizing of the university's budget, and so I'm very, very, very excited to be part of that process and see all the sausages made. Is it stage fright if I'm sitting down? Like, I don't think that qualifies. But nonetheless, I am very, very excited for the opportunity, and I'm excited to, be sat here. This is an opportunity in and of itself, and I recognize that. With that, I yield my time to our dear Jill.
Hi, thank you. Hi, everyone. So bear with me a little bit. I've tested for a negative for COVID 3 times now, but I have a little bit of a cold. So hi, everyone. My name is Joe Kovach. I'm the ASMSU and student body president this year, and I also want to echo Stevie's remarks on Spartan Advantage. I'm a low-income student who relies on Spartan Advantage myself, who's feared losing the scholarship every single year because of the amount of students who get to slip through the cracks for it. Continuing on, ASMSU in my time will not stop standing with the MSU swim and dive teams in my term. The lack of transparency and willingness to negotiate with these students is unacceptable, and I hope that any further updates will think of those, like the students we heard from today, who have remained at MSU in hopes of reinstatement. People who have fought for years for this reinstatement. I spoke to one student swimmer this summer who maintained a near-perfect GPA and continued swimming for the swim club, who had to watch all her fellow athletes she came into MSU with receive awards for their outstanding academic achievement as student athletes and had to graduate without one since she's not considered an athlete by MSU. I've been told contrasting information regarding the instatement of a higher student rec tax to put a regulation pool in the IM building being built. I've been told that a pool might not come until after the building is complete. And as someone who spent the last year as the executive director of the Association of Big Ten Students, the Big Ten deserves to have to battle MSU and swim and dive as well. Continuing on, ASMSU is in the process of registering students to vote. Our Vice President for Governmental Affairs, Ishan Modi, is putting in a ton of work to make sure students are informed about their vote and ready to do so. In conjunction with this, ASMSU advocated for years to have a fall break for students and are so thankful to have finally gotten it last year. We initially asked for voting day to be a part of the initial fall break, but heard from people that this could not be a reality because too many students would leave and not vote in East Lansing. I live in what is now a full hour and a half drive away with the construction on I-96 in Lincoln Park, Michigan, and know that plenty of other students live even further in districts that desperately need their vote. I ask that we consider this in the making of the next academic calendar. How can we be Michigan's state university without promoting the vote for the citizens of this beautiful state? For those who don't know, about a month ago, my personal office door was vandalized with a hate symbol after an article came out about me being the first openly non-binary student body president at Michigan State. I had a sticker my freshman year that said that hate has no home here at MSU. You all, myself, and every minoritized student knows that this is far from the truth. Hate is alive and well at Michigan State University, and there have been several bias incidents since I personally stepped foot on this campus. I hope to spend this year working with all of you to bring more of these minoritized students, especially those from our most diverse class of 9,800 this year, to the table to make campus safer and to make sure that nobody has to feel afraid to be who they are at MSU. I've also been working with the student body president at the Blue School a bit south to promote safety for our game in Ann Arbor next month, and I'll reach out to all of you about that soon. And lastly, I'm excited for my last year here at MSU. Many lasts are coming up for me, and I'm excited to share those experiences with my fellow Spartan students. The students I speak with, whether it be the 22 I live with every day or those I interact with throughout campus as much as I can, make this campus the beautiful, diverse, and outstanding place that it is, and I'm pleased to represent them this year. Thank you.
Pass it over to the faculty. also our faculty.
So good morning. My comments will be brief. We want to thank all parties for this past year's active engagement with academic governance, Faculty Senate, the University Committee on Faculty Affairs, our at-large members, Provost Woodruff, President Stanley, and you, the Board of Trustees. As always, we extend an invitation to the board to attend the Faculty Senate and University Council meetings. Trustee Vassar is the faculty liaison, and we appreciate and welcome her engagement in those spaces. During our meeting on yesterday, we discussed the many initiatives that are in place regarding safety for members of the MSU community, whether these are involving training of our campus law enforcement professionals, facility security, the utilization of our university notification systems, mental health and wellness resources and capacity, or the ongoing strategic response to COVID and now monkeypox viruses. Additionally, the university is actively promoting voter engagement for students, staff, and faculty. And as Trustee Byram declared, if we can get young people to engage early with voting, they will become lifelong voters. MSU Votes emphasizes voter registration and making a plan to vote. As faculty, we can prioritize the importance of voting in the classroom and supporting and encouraging students to do so and reminding them that early voting is an option. We look forward to another year of robust academic governance. Academic governance is a verb. It is the work we do. Let's do the work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So, as chairperson of the board, I want to first acknowledge all of those that came for public participation this morning. I do appreciate you taking your time to come before the board and to present your comments. Today there is so much good news. You know, welcome back, Spartans, first of all. But there's so much good news. I wanted to be applauding nonstop this morning, so I was very grateful for the research presentation because I could finally put my hands together and clap with all the excitement that was presented there on battery technology. But let's give a big round of applause for all of the excitement going on campus right now so I can get my energy out. As I was driving in this morning, the sun wasn't up yet, but there was a large group of students that had been gathering. I assume they went out for a run together this morning because it looked like they were doing after-run stretches and things. And so, yes, we're back. I was at the football game Saturday, and it was a spectacular crowd. I was walking around campus ahead of the game, and it was just action and activity everywhere. So it really felt like the campus was back. And in fact, when the provost gave her update yesterday at our work session, we have 82% of our classes are in person, 7% are hybrid, and 11% are online. So very clearly, we are back. We welcomed 49,934 students. It is our largest incoming freshman class, and I think that's the fourth year in a row. We have 130 countries and 82 of 83 counties. I don't know that county that doesn't have a representative. Last year we had one county, so it's the challenge to the provost to get all 83 counties represented in our student body, our freshman incoming class. And also the average credit hours are 14.4 credits. That's important. We need to get as close to 15 credits a semester because that impacts the cost of your education and the years to complete. So the cost of tuition is just one part of the cost of getting a degree, but what also makes a significant impact is how quickly you complete that degree. That equates to credits per semester and that you complete. So the most expensive college debt is debt that you don't end up with a diploma. So I think that 14.4 credits was extremely important. I'm also very thankful for the faculty highlighting MSU Votes and the importance of student voting. I've been very outspoken when it comes to student voting. I believe in the deep part of my soul that we need an engaged, informed student population
that feels and exercises their fundamental right as a citizen to vote. We want every eligible student registered to vote and making a plan to vote. That is your voice. That is your way to impact what goes on in the state of Michigan, on campus, across the nation, and that we should be encouraging all eligible voters to vote, and we should not stand idly by with any kind of voter intimidation that would suppress that right to vote. We want to support access. And so with those comments, I am going to do everything I can do to make sure that MSU Votes is successful this year and that we do get students registered. They do have a plan and they do vote. So there was that. And this is on a sadder note, but I do want to acknowledge Jim Pochin. So Dr. Pochin was someone that had a long history here at Michigan State, and he passed away here in just the last few weeks. So I'm going to read just a piece of his obituary because I do think it shows respect to him as an individual and for all he contributed to Michigan State. So E. James Pochin, MD, JD, Michigan State University Distinguished Professor and inaugural chair of the MSU Radiology Department, passed away on August 20th, 2022, at the age of 89. In 1975, Dr. Pochin was appointed the first professor and chair of the new Department of Radiology at Michigan State University. While at MSU, he taught numerous courses in the College of Human Medicine and Osteopathic Medicine and Lyman Briggs College. In 1990, Dr. Pochin was recognized as a Michigan State University Distinguished Professor. Throughout his life, Dr. Pochin had a passion for nature. Perhaps his most celebrated and enduring success was his vision for and the orchestration of the Radiology Healing Gardens. This caring and calming environment includes beautiful gardens and waterfalls and has been a destination for patients, students, and visitors and university employees since the year 2000. So I just thought it was appropriate to acknowledge the passing of Dr. Pochin today. He was a friend. I knew him for a long, long time. So with that, I will conclude my comments. Thank you very much.
Trustee Kelly.
Thank you. Just a couple of brief comments. First of all, I do support some of the comments made by the chair with regard to turning out the student vote. I think that's very important. I encourage it. Secondly, I want to congratulate the provost on the selection. That is a significant honor, and it's well received by the board. Finally, in the personnel actions, we did approve a contract that wasn't noted, which was for Tom Izzo, another 5-year contract. So I just want to note that I personally am very happy about that, and actually I'd like it to be a lifetime contract.
I agree. Smart for life.
Yeah, exactly, which he probably is. But so it's a little bittersweet for me. This is the first time in 12 years where I've come to East Lansing without having a student here or a child that is a student. So when I left, there was no place to stop on the way out here. But it was nice to get on campus Wednesday night and see all the young students, realizing that so many of them are starting this great 4 years ahead of them. So it's fun to come here in the fall, particularly on the first couple of days of the semester. So that'll conclude my comments.
Trustee Foster.
I, too, would like to welcome our largest and most diverse incoming class, and I'm sure the Trustee Byram's efforts will get them all registered to vote, right?
I'm trying.
I'd also like to note the passing of Dr. Jim Pochin. He was truly a Renaissance man. Those that you knew him, he was a character. He was an advocate and a leader in medicine, business, and horticulture. His influence wasn't just here on campus, but I noted that several years ago he was instrumental in placing the first MRI in the country of Malawi. So he did some really spectacular things for humankind and will be sorely missed. I'd also like to note that Trustee Byram and Dan Bowman and I had the opportunity to tour the Forest Innovation Center and UP Research and Extension Center in July. Mm-hmm. And thank thank our great faculty there. I'll tell you, I didn't realize that maple syrup production could be so technical. You know? it was an eye opener. So that concludes my remarks.
Trustee Kanaki Jefferson.
Thank you. Yeah, a few remarks I'd like to make as well. I also want to acknowledge the passing of Dr. Pochin. Dr. Pochin and his wife, Jerry, were really the first people to welcome me and my family when we moved to East Lansing in 2005. At the time, my son was 4 months old, so I often say that James learned to walk at Spartan marching band practices and feeding ducks in the Red Cedar River, but really, if I think about it, it was in those MSU radiology gardens. And he took his senior photos, the senior in high school year, we took his senior photos there this weekend. So I'd like to think that Dr. Pochin would have been very proud of that moment. I want to welcome everyone back, especially our faculty liaisons, our student liaisons, and Delaney, George, Patrick, Stevie, Al, Joe, all just hearing what's happening. It's just a glimpse, I know, but thank you, because each of those stories and pieces are really inspiring. Joe, I wrote this to you already, but I am so sorry about what happened. I admire your example that you set, your leadership in everything, but especially in how you've navigated that event, so thank you. I really appreciate that all of you are focused on voting. Let me say just a few things about that as well, and I'll echo my colleagues' sentiments, but I want to say just a bit more. And I certainly commend all of the efforts here at Michigan State. 25 years ago, MSU Votes was officially established to push students to make it easier and more accessible for students to register to vote. You should all do that. You should all make a plan. But as someone who was historically excluded from the ballot box, I'm mindful that not only do we have an obligation to make a plan for ourselves on how we're going to vote, but we need to think about how we are making sure everyone else has the same access, especially groups that were historically excluded from the ballot box. And so I encourage everyone to not just make your plan to vote, but to think about how you will be actively helping others. And one thing that's really important is to consider voter suppression bills. There's one that passed through the legislature but was vetoed by the governor and is now making its way back through signatures. And on that, I would call everyone on our campus community to be mindful of different ways that there are obstacles put into place in how everyone votes. And I would especially challenge university leadership, everyone sitting at this table and the administration, to think about how we call together our MSU community, our partners, our vendors, our anyone who is a part of our Spartan community to come together and to resist voter suppression, to actively call it out, and to ensure that not only we each have our individual plan to vote, but that we are opening up the way to everyone around us. Then I'll just say a few things about some of the public. Oh, before I talk about the public comments, Dr. Feng, thank you so much for your work. So I always love hearing from our faculty and the amazing work that they're doing, but it was especially inspiring to hear from you today, so thank you. Okay, so then the comments, the public comments. I will just respond to Mr. Golden, since he directed his comments to me personally. First, to correct a few things. I think he mentioned that I issued a statement in 2018, which would not have been possible if I did not join the Board of Trustees until 2019. I did make a couple of different statements related to the NASA situation. I was appointed to the board because another trustee resigned over disagreement about whether or not to release documents associated with the NASA litigation publicly. And so when I joined, I promised that since I didn't have agreement here to release those documents, I would look at them myself. And I did that. And I think the statement that he meant to reference was one that I read to everyone, and it's on my website, Trust Jefferson. You can go and see it's still there, that explained the outcome of that review. And I stand by it. At the end of the day, I did also call for those documents to still be released, to be publicly available for everyone to read them. And so if you want to learn more about what all of he was talking about, you can certainly still read those statements that are in the record. Ad hoc faculty committee, or university committee on sustainable investment, I appreciate you bringing your efforts to our attention. Of course, the way that we manage our money is a statement of our values, and I think it's exactly right that we should be aligning that with our strategic plan and also our DEI strategic plan. And so I agree with that. I support those sentiments, and I appreciate you reminding us to be thinking about that. And then I think, let me make sure I've got everything in my notes. So it's last, but it's certainly not least. Sheridan, are you still here?
No.
Yeah, oh, you sure. Are. Sheridan Bailyn, you are more than enough. You are the best. You are what we want all of our Michigan State students to be. And so I am sorry that your experience here was not what you thought it would be when you signed up. But like all Spartans, you are taking what you got of it, and you're making the most of it. And so thank you for coming and sharing your story. I am finding myself once again apologizing to members of Swim and Dive, and I think you may be the only one who's still here, so that you can pass on my sentiments, which are not going to be surprising to anyone. I'm sorry for the loss of your program and what you experienced, and I hope that we will continue to talk about the possibility of bringing Swim and Dive back. And that concludes my remarks.
Trustee O'Keefe.
Thank you. I only have a few comments. I do want to recognize Stevie, Val, and Joe, and thank you for your service as student liaisons. It's greatly appreciated to have students who want to be in those roles and be able to communicate their ideas. It's well received. Fall, not unlike April, as we head into spring, September on campus is a season of hope. And so, you know, we have freshmen who come to the campus, you know, hoping for a great experience and a great education. They get the intimidation, maybe in the anxiety of being on a new school and a big campus. But, you know, the only advice I would give you is that you often finish as you start, so start strong. To the seniors, make the most of your final year. Time goes by so fast. Enjoy it, and I will tell you there is no greater recognition than as a Spartan grad. And Joe, to you individually, I hope you have a great senior year, and thank you for your service. And I, too, echo some of Chairman Byram's comments on voting. Voting is an important right that we all have. Exercise it. Educate yourself on issues. Be passionate about the country and your ability to vote, because a lot of people don't have that right. And so exercise. It's a great responsibility, but it's also a great right. And that's the end of my comments.
Trustee Scott.
Thank you. I want to just echo what my colleague said. I'm not going to belabor the excitement that you feel when you come on campus. I almost ran over a student. It was awesome because I'm like, wow, they're back, right? You got to look both ways because they don't watch. So that woke me up that everybody's back on campus, and it was an eye-opening moment this morning. Thank the Lord I did not strike a student. That being said, though, Trustee Vassar and I had the opportunity yesterday to attend, and it was my very first Spartan Remix, so shout out to Vinny for letting us know about it, and it was awesome. I mean, the energy out there was just amazing, and I actually got to watch our Native American students doing several of their routines and singing, and just the cultural experience was just everything that I want us to have for our students, faculty, and staff to experience one another and the diversity that we share here on this beautiful campus. And it really excited me because I was just thinking in my mind, as soon as the Multicultural Center is done and we're going to have that stage, isn't that going to be awesome that those types of performances could be there, right? And that we can have exhibits to share in our cultures. And I don't know, my mind just was going when I saw that. So it just excited me. And I just shout out to all of the organizations that were out there, and I'm wishing everyone a very successful and happy and safe school year. I'd also like to talk about the voter rights. So I'm going to first acknowledge, obviously, MSU Votes is awesome, and I absolutely would encourage all of you all to, as my colleagues have said, educate yourselves and engage in that process. I may be an outlier on this board. I actually would love for students to have the day off, quite frankly, because I am one of those who it may take me 2 hours or so to get home and to get back. You know, that's a 4 hours out of my day. I think for some students that want to vote, you know, where they reside, that is an impediment to voting. And so I would certainly be in support of students having that day off. And again, I may be the outlier for that. But I want to kind of segue into the voter suppression. And I'm sure many of you may have seen the article that came out. I don't subscribe to the Detroit because I'm a West Sider, so I just don't. So I couldn't read it, but my colleague shared with me the article, and it was very discouraging to me that people believe it's okay to withhold funding for a university based on their political views maybe being threatened and can't see outside of their own political beliefs for the greater good of a university. It is just discouraging to me, and so I think it's unacceptable, and I think that's probably why I hate politics, quite frankly, even though I am a politician. It's just disgusting to me. And so, you know, for the agenda item that was removed today, everybody knows what I'm talking about. I just have to say personally that it is distressing to me that we weren't able to move forward. I think that it is right for us to discourage people from purposefully doing anything to impede the ability of black and brown voters to vote, which is their constitutional right. I think that anyone that supports people who purposefully try to engage in tactics that will make it harder for people should be outed and should not be supported. That is my personal view. And I will stand by that till the day that I am I'm not going to be 6 feet under because I'm being cremated. Forgot that was in my estate plan. So anyway, that being said, I will support that to the day that I take my last breath. And so I believe we have some people that came here with the thought that we were going to be doing a resolution today, and to them I say that I am sorry that we were unable to do that. I will stand by them in whatever other capacities that we can and support them in those initiatives, because I certainly agree with everything that they are trying to do so that we make the process as fair and give the opportunities equally to everyone. I'd also like to acknowledge and congratulate Provost Woodruff on being inducted into the National Academy of Arts and Sciences. I think that is amazing. She's amazing. I'm not surprised. I can't wait to see. Hopefully we'll get a picture of her signature with Michigan State University next to it. That is just remarkable, so I'd like to congratulate her on that. I'd like to also thank Dr. Fang for bringing excitement to just the energy with your presentation today, but also giving the students that are working with you in that research the opportunity to work with you, I'm sure is just something that they will never forget. And what you are doing is placing us on the map. So thank you so much for your continued research and your work. I would also like to speak to, and I don't want you to cry, please, because I will start to cry, and I have on false eyelashes. And that would not be pretty, right? So I would like to say to you, Sheridan, that one of the things you said is that your identity you felt was lost. And I get that, because I recognize that a lot of us tie our identity to certain things or activities. But I would echo what Trustee Kanaki Jefferson said, that you are enough, and you have so much more to give than that. And that is not to say that you won't have that opportunity again, but I want you to understand who you are outside of that, that you are important. And I want to acknowledge the passion in which you have engaged in trying to get us to turn or pivot, if you will, and make a decision that would allow Swim and Dive to come back. And we had a long talk outside of, I think it was the June meeting, and I made you some promises, and I just want you to know that we are still working towards hopefully fulfilling those things. So I don't want you to lose hope. Okay? All right. Man, don't want to cry. Okay. I'm done. That's been in my comments.
Trustee Tebe.
I just want to start by welcoming Stevie and Ballinger to the table. Welcome, and I'm looking forward to working with all of you over the next semester/year, and Hannah as well, which is unfortunately not with us, but looking forward to getting to know you, and I thank you so much for your leadership, and I'm excited to spend some time with you. I also want to acknowledge the swim, dive, and share, and I cannot see you at all. I saw your hand, so I know you're there, but I want to thank you for your bravery in speaking today. I know it's not always an easy thing to come up in front of a group and a microphone and tell your story, and I want to make it very clear, I've had conversations with Mike Bailo, who I know is still here because he's tall and I can still see, I can see him, that I regret the decision to, my vote in the decision to remove the swim and dive team, both men and women, from Michigan State's athletic program. I am, again, one vote, but I would say if the vote happened today, I would absolutely vote to reinstate it. So I just want to make that clear to you all, and Sheridan, if you could pass that along to your teammates, that they have my support. I also want to talk about what a few of my colleagues touched on when it comes to voting rights. I believe the success of this country relies on the cornerstone of residents easily and without barrier exercising their right to participate in democracy by voting. I'm proud of MSU's role in encouraging our students and staff to engage in this process for the past 25 years through MSU Vote, and our bi- and multi-partisan student clubs that participate as well. Going back to my time as a student, I remember the encouragement to vote regardless of partisan leaning. Voting by nature is bi- and multi-partisan, and within each party, there is disagreement too. When used in a healthy way, the debate of ideas ultimately strengthens our country. This debate was one of the things I loved most about my educational experience at James Madison. There have been efforts throughout history and happening today in Michigan that do nothing but discourage residents from free and willful participation. I found those acts to be, by relationships, these types of initiatives in direct conflict with the fundamental rights that our institution has sought to promote for the past 2.5 decades. I think it is important that we call out the impact that these types of initiatives have sought and by their nature still seek to have on communities of color and poverty, both urban and rural, who have been marginalized and disenfranchised for hundreds of years. This direct intent is abhorrent, and as we as leaders of institutions like Michigan State have a responsibility to call this behavior what it is, voter suppression. It is my intent and hope that administration and us as trustees will exercise all political and business relationships and means we have at our disposal to stop efforts such as these that fundamentally weaken the strength of our democracy. That's all I have to say.
You go, girl.
Trustee Dr. Vassar.
Okay. So, thank you, fabulous faculty. Without you, we wouldn't be. So, I appreciate all you do and all that you continue to do and will do this year for our students. And thank you, students. All the folks who come and persist to come, you really invigorate me and give me a lot of hope, and you hearten me, so thank you. And I think you should hold us accountable. Like, you keep coming every time with some of the same concerns over and over again. You should hold us accountable. Tell your story, amen, and then say, what are you going to do? So I want to thank my colleagues for showing up in authentic ways this week. I have learned so much, and I was told to, you know, keep this light and be positive, and I just really cannot, just can't do it. It's with a heavy heart and much chagrin that I announce that we have 13 days of summer left. 13 days. How? Where did July go? I love July. I was born in July. She's a cheat. Duplicitous. Came, didn't even put her purse down, left. August, I think she may have watched The Devil Wears Prada for inspiration, because she came with a lot of work, breezed through, very demanding, very angry, and left and gone. So here in September, school has started. Welcome. Amen. I'm still bitter. I'm bitter. I'm glad we're here, but there's only 13 days left of long days. So get out there and get the sun as the sun continues to strengthen us, right? While we're still here on this side of the 6 feet of ground, because we're not cremated yet. And so you should live out loud. And so I have my father on my earrings today, and his birthday is 9/11. He was a veteran. He's buried at Fort Custer. A wonderful, wonderful, wonderful human being. And he gave me all of the fortitude that I have today. And I want to just read a statement that I have made, because he fought for our country. He fought for my rights. He fought for your rights. He fought. And that's what I do. I fight. You can fight or flight response every single time. It's on. That's not always best, but in this case, I think it is. I'm committed. You know, I've committed my whole life to education, although I've primarily been a teacher. I'm also a lifelong learner. And I've learned so much in my role as a trustee. I'm certainly learning a lot. While I may not have decades of experience as a MSU trustee and a public official, I mean, this is my first run at anything. I've never even been PTA president. I think I said that. And by the way, my son bites now, so probably wouldn't make it on the PTA. Yeah, bites. So there's that. He's a kindergartner. I don't know what's going on in that class, but I got to get over there. But I ran for this position, and I have decades of academic research and writing about the experience of Black people in this country, and I'm intimately familiar with how law and policy and private corporations have been used to oppress Black people in this country in myriad ways: education, access to capital, access to home ownership, access to the ballot, just to name a few. Fair access to voting has been and continues to be a critical battlefield for Black freedom. The rapidly changing demographics of this country have sharpened the focus of those who have traditionally been held in positions of power, right? And so I understand it's a threat. But really, the sharing is not that big of a deal. Sure, we had a banner year of enrollment at MSU. Guess who didn't? Guess whose number dwindled this year? Thank you, Trustee. It's the existential threat, because people don't understand that equal rights for others does not mean less rights for you. It's not pie. There's going to be more pieces. The illogical fear of equity has resulted in every gain for Black people being followed by an intense and often deadly response. This is true from the country's roots in enslavement of African descendants to the present day, from Reconstruction to the Civil War to the ratification of the 13th Amendment, which ended enslavement of African descendants in this country, to the 14th Amendment, which attempted to provide equal rights and protections to all citizens, to the 15th Amendment, which attempted to prohibit states from taking away the right to vote on account of race and color or previous condition of servitude, in the signing of the Electoral Commission Act, in the enactment of Jim Crow efforts in that era in the states, like the poll tax, the grandfather clause, which my grandfather, his father, was subjected to. Literacy, citizenship tests, to the countless acts of heroism by activists and veterans and white allies, to Bloody Sunday, to the passage of the Voting Rights Act, to the Supreme Court's decision in Shelby County versus Holder, to modern voter suppression battles in Arizona, Georgia, Texas, Michigan, other states, including right here. Throughout the history of Black voter suppression, there is also a constant threat of harm
to those who have fought for freedom and fair access to the ballot. There have been beatings, lynchings, massacres, and now, apparently, threats to eliminate funding to MSU. We just deliberated on an increase to voter access and a threat. This comes as no surprise when we consider that the same history of beating, lynching, and death can be detailed for those who have fought for black children and adults to have fair and equitable access to public education. The threat to defund MSU is particularly troubling to me when I think of a courageous Spartan who risked his life to integrate public schools in Arkansas. These are strange fruits of a common tree. With any battle, there will be injuries and casualties. I get that. There will be those who engage in propaganda and attempts to distract you from what the fight is even about. There will also be those who dodge the draft or provide aid and comfort the enemy while standing among your ranks. For wars like this that seemingly never end, the weapons always evolve. Just as in conflict, just as my father was in the military, the weapons change, right? They change. As for me, in my role as a mother, as an educator, as a black woman in America, you should know that I always fight. Since kindergarten, I fought. I always fight. I'm not going to stop. I always fight against oppression, ableism, sexism, racism, classism, homophobia, normativity, all of these things I fight against. It's not going to end. The fight is bigger than MSU's Board of Trustees. I understand this. But I'm fighting for MSU Spartans. I'm fighting for my children and the Michiganders who don't have a big salary or big title or unlimited resources to amplify their opinions. And I am unafraid. I do not flinch. I stand with another mom, Governor Whitmer, who also answered the call of public service and who recognized that there were some in this state who, quote, are participating in a coordinated national attack on voting rights that is designed to undermine confidence in our election system and systematically disenfranchise black voters, community of color, older voters, and college students. I will have no part in any effort that grants an ounce of credence to this deception so harmful to our democracy. End quote. And I agree wholeheartedly. In closing, my commitment to this fight for full and fair access to the ballot is not about partisan affiliation, as some allege. Anyone, be they red, blue, purple plaid, probably not purple because that's Prince, so, or any entity, it doesn't matter, who seeks to continue these deeply rooted efforts to suppress black votes without regard to their method, means, or attempt to claim otherwise, will be challenged. Go green.
Hawaii.
That concludes trustee comments.
Thank you. That will conclude our meeting. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Support?
Support.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?